Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Business Insurance Trust. Today, we're talking with ACEC Alabama Executive Director Rene Casillas and Roger Gillian, General Counsel and Vice President at Volkert, about a big legislative victory for the industry in Alabama this spring, passing indemnity protections for engineers and other design professionals in the state. The act renders void and unenforceable contractual provisions in three key areas: those that require engineers to indemnify others for damages that are not caused by the engineer, those that require engineers to defend another party if the defense is not covered by professional liability insurance, and those that require engineers to name another party as an additional insured on a policy of professional liability insurance. The new law also establishes a statutory standard of care for engineers and voids any more expansive contractual standard of care. It was nearly a three-year effort by ACEC Alabama and its partners to get this done, and Rene and Roger are here to talk to us about it. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us this morning, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here with y'all.
So, thanks so much for asking.
Yeah, thank you. What initiated the need to pass this indemnity protection in Alabama?
Well, for a very long time, Alabama has been a state where any indemnity obligation would be honored and enforced by the courts. So if two relatively sophisticated parties agreed to an indemnity obligation in a contract, it would be enforceable in Alabama, even if it were unfair, even if it were terribly one-sided, even if it were uninsurable from one party's perspective. So what led to this was simply years and years of lengthy and frustrating and inefficient, many times, contract negotiations where engineers and other design professionals would point out the realities of how their professional liability insurance programs work, only to have, you know, clients frequently say, well, that's too bad. If you want the work, you need to agree to this language. So we have seen sister states successfully pass some type of legislation that provides, you know, put some rails on this and provide some protection for design professionals in a contractual setting. And Renee and I have talked about this for many years, and we said, why not us? So we rolled our sleeves up and got to it.
So when you say get to it, what did you do? What was the process for moving from you and Renee talking to getting a law passed?
Go ahead, Renee.
Well, Roger came to me one day. It was probably our first meeting many years ago. You know, early on, I had this wish list of legislation that we should attempt in Alabama. And of course, all that is generally discussed at the Risk Management Committee discussions and discussed a lot among the NACI group, where I hear, you know, state executive directors discussing the many victories that they've had throughout the years. And of course, we have the tremendous resources of the Legal Counsel's Forum. And many, many years ago, Roger asked me how to get engaged, and I knew exactly where he needed to fit for the organization, not just for his own personal development. He is in-house legal counsel for our largest member firm, Volkert, which is headquartered down in Mobile, Alabama. And they have always been a greatly supportive company to our organization throughout my tenure, which we're going on 30 years now, Jerry.
Wow, congrats.
Up until about 10 years ago, I used to claim rookie status, but that's not the case anymore because a lot of greater executive directors have retired very recently. And I guess that puts me at the top of the big dog pile. But in any case, I knew exactly how we could get Roger involved, engaged in ACEC. I am very pleased that he chose to engage at the national level where I feel like he, received continues to receive great benefit for his membership investment. And through his work with legal counsel's form, a few years later, he joined the risk management committee. And I think that's where we began to develop a plan to chase after, you know, the important legislation, including our indemnification and duty to defend bill that we recently passed. And so we developed a strategy, you know, identifying who our opponents could possibly be and partners and who we wanted to bring on board, because essentially ACEC was the organization in Alabama that spearheaded the what I would call the Design Professionals Coalition. So from our perspective, you know, it was one of those bucket list items that Roger, through his great leadership and expertise as a legal counsel for a great member firm for a very long time now, you know, we achieved victory because of his expertise.
When you say you had organizations on both sides, what if you were to line up the organizations on your side and the organization that opposed, what would some of those be?
Roger can speak to the opposition, which mainly came out of the contracting groups, because that's a side of the industry that I'm not very familiar with. But the partners that joined the coalition would be the Alabama AIA, the land surveyors, landscape architects. We had geologists on board and interior designers. And Roger, I don't know if I left anybody out, but it was a great group of industry partners that we have worked together in the past for many years on various pieces of legislation impacting our industry. But they now benefit from this indemnification law that goes on the books in a few days.
Yeah, and I'll say this strategically, we made a decision very early on that we didn't want to take an adversarial tone or adversarial position with anybody. We were very careful not to refer to anyone as opponents, especially when we were meeting with folks. We obviously identified people from the design professional industry that would line up with us. And then we just looked at stakeholders, people who would, you know, logically, predictably have a say in this matter, want to have a say in this matter, and people who we wanted to hear us out. And so we reached out to those groups very early on in the process. And we sat down with them with a draft of the bill, which is a whole other story, talking about the sausage making process. But we sat down with our first draft of the bill with people who were stakeholders that we recognized and had respect for throughout the state as either being, a large group of interested stakeholders or powerful groups who we had to recognize, had the ability to slow down or otherwise derail our efforts. And so we reached out and tried to embrace them very early on, and were very transparent and candid and said, there is a problem that exists in contracting with design professionals in Alabama. We'd like to describe the problem. We'd like to show you our proposed solution to that problem and discuss ways that we don't think it would be harmful to you as a group. And we did that with a number of groups, many of whom represent different strata or types of clients that design professionals typically have in our state. And we really looked at it more like a partnering, even though we might not have been completely aligned. We were very careful not to take an adversarial position or tone where we could. Naturally, in the process, there are people who have skepticism or questions, doubts, or maybe even some opposing views. And we talked with them extensively and worked with them. And I think that thanks to Renee's leadership and her experience in Montgomery, dealing with legislators, dealing with stakeholders, with her long experience in shepherding legislation through the process, we were able at the end to get to where not only the the legislature, both houses, were able to recognize that the bill was unopposed in its final stages, but our governor was able to see that as well. And that could not have been done without Renee's leadership and without a good strategy going forward. We tried to be positive and we tried to be partnering. And I think that's really key for anyone who wants to do something like this where people could be skeptical of your effort.
So you, when it actually went into the onto the floor, it actually moved through unopposed.
I believe in the House, the House came second. In the Senate, I think it passed 26-0. Renee, I'm not sure if that number is right.
It was pretty much unanimous.
And we had one abstention in the House. I think it was 92-0-1 in the House. It was, wow. There were no nay votes that I'm aware of.
No nay votes.
Make a good argument. How did you, mobilize the membership for this? Or was it, I know you formed a committee with all the other organizations, but did you reach out to the other member, the rest of the members in ACC Alabama to talk to their legislators?
We reached out to membership. We had an inner circle of our executive committee and operations committee, committee of past presidents who were very, politically savvy to begin with. Of course, we had our external alliances. Roger spoke to identifying our stakeholder and organizational partners that we worked with. And again, I'm going to speak to Roger's expertise and his great ability to lead the effort. And that's why he was appointed by our past president, Kendall Kilpatrick from Mott MacDonald. His ability is recognized across the state in our industry. But we had initially approached the Trial Lawyers Association, which is called the Alabama Association for Justice, to see, we knew that they pretty much would give us, solid advice whether or not they liked the bill, and they did. They worked very closely with Roger to help us tailor the bill in a fashion that really didn't harm our intent, only helped us. We also partnered with the League of Municipalities and the County Commissions because those are our clients. And again, it was a year and a half effort to work through, negotiations and language. And again, pointing back to Roger, who has that legal expertise, because the bill is very legal. And then, of course, I have to give credit to our two teams of lobbyists. ACEC has On Employ, the Bloom Group, who is, I would say, one of the top three lobbying firms in the state. They are very credible, recognized. I've been working with them since my tenure as executive director since the year 2000. And then Wyndham and Associates, or I guess it's Wyndham Gallagher and Associates. And that comes through the resource of Volkert, where Volkert, they serve Volkert. So Volkert stepped up in a big way, loaning us their tremendous resources. And again, the Wyndham Group is very, very well recognized. So you have that lobbying muscle that went in from the get-go that has those relationships in place. I'm busy 24/7 being the executive director of a very active MO, but I can't spend 24/7 up at the State House. They do. That's why we employ them. And it's because of, their expertise as well that helped to lead the effort. But on the front end, we had a lot of groundwork to do. And I do credit Roger again for that lead and his ability to, make those that had the questions, that had great concerns about what we were trying to do. And it came during a time that, the AGC, the ABC, our partners in the construction industry, Alabama Road Builders Association, and the Alabama Concrete Association, the subcontractors of Alabama, they were all thinking about doing the same thing. Of course, their bill is very much different than ours, but they too are on a quest to pass similar type legislation for their industry. So I'm just glad that we got it done. And
Jerry, I'll add this. This was, any effort like this necessarily has to be a team effort. This was the epitome of a team effort. ACEC Alabama led the way, but we had tremendous assistance and expertise from the risk attorneys at Grayling Risk and Insurance Brokerage, which is the program administrator for the ACEC Business Insurance Trust. Greg Bunshue and Kent Collier helped bounce things off of us because something that was critically important to us in trying to craft this legislation, not only from an end result perspective, but also in an effort to be transparent and honest with our stakeholders as we negotiated, was to say what design professionals and engineers say in every contract negotiation, which is we simply want to be put in a position where the risk that you're asking us to take on is insurable. So we work very hard to make sure that any changes that were requested or tweaks that were made left engineers in what we understand to be an insurable position. And so the folks at Grayling were instrumental in that. Our partners throughout the MO, the member firms and their representatives who represent, you know, very small firms to mid-sized firms to large firms, all added a perspective and an experiential viewpoint that we baked into our efforts. And this was a team effort across the board, you know, as Renee has said. Anyone wanting to conceptualize an effort like this needs to look at getting effective lobbying help. That's just how things work, you know, in America, when it comes to legislation. But you also need to surround yourself with people who can give you differing viewpoints, that know the landscape, and can, you know, kind of keep you pointed in the direction that you've set. And it definitely takes a team, and we had a great team on this effort, and I think the results prove that out.
Jerry, you know, I would be remiss to leave out our bill champion and our bill sponsor, Senator Clyde Chambliss, who happens to be a PE, and he and his wife both are PEs. They are owners of a small civil firm, a civil engineering consulting firm in Prattville, Alabama, which is just north of Montgomery. So Senator Chambliss is now in his second term, I believe, and he has been a great champion, literally changed the landscape for us by his service in the Alabama State Senate. He is one of the most respected state senators because of his knowledge politically. You know, he has served in local government positions in his hometown as a city councilman, a county commissioner. So he very well navigated through the legislative process for us. And because of his knowledge of contracts from, you know, from an engineering perspective, you know, his leadership is invaluable. And he has won great respect from the executive branch and the legislative leadership. And I do believe that that's why we were so successful with unanimous vote in favor of the legislation.
On a practical level, you mentioned that basically the bill ensures, or the law ensures, that risks are insurable. Is that the case on a practical level for a firm in Alabama now? Basically, are their business risks insurable?
So what we tried to do was keep the triggers of the statutory indemnity and keep the risk that engineers would take on insurable under an architects and engineers typical policy of professional liability insurance, because that's the space where the problem arises, right? Engineers will tell you that when they're asked to defend a client against a claim that's covered under its commercial general liability insurance policy, that's not a problem. Asking to defend a client against a claim against the client arising from an automobile accident caused by the engineer, that's not a problem because that's covered under those types of insurance policies. Naming someone else like a client as an additional insured under a commercial general liability or automobile liability insurance policy, that's not a problem. But professional liability insurance does not provide a defense of others, at least currently. That's not commercially available. It does not allow a client or someone else to be named an additional insured. And underwriters from that space can explain all the reasons why. But that's a reality that makes engineers different from many, if not most, everyone else that, a client enters into a contract with on any type of construction project. And so inevitably what happens is the client is used to just getting signed contracts back in the mail. And then, you know, the engineer saunters in and says, I have these problems, or my insurance broker has these problems, or my attorney told me this is problematic. This will expose me to uninsured risk. And there's a disconnect. And of course, in a environment where engineers and other design professionals are selected based on quality, not on price, where an owner is not compelled to select someone on the design professional side simply because they're the lowest responsive, responsible bidder, that creates a problem in the contracting phase, because many times an engineer has to make a business decision to take on risk that could create some insurability problems in the sake of getting business. So what we tried to do, and again, working with insurance experts throughout this process at Grayling, we tried to make sure that what we were going to end up with legislatively met our goal, which was to keep the risk for a design professional insurable. So with respect to our duty to defend provision of this law, it says that a duty to defend clause is void and unenforceable unless it's insured under a professional liability insurance policy. Now today, that's not commercially available. So today that would, a clause like that would be void and unenforceable, but who knows in the future. If the marketplace changes, it's again what engineers say in every contract negotiation, I just want what's fair, and I just want to make sure that my risk is insurable. I don't want to have to take on risk that someone else creates simply because of how I'm selected. And so that was very important to us to try to maintain that structure and try to communicate that message. And so we think that's what we've accomplished. That was certainly our goal. And hopefully this law will make contract negotiations smoother. I really hope that there will be a point in time when the word indemnity or the paragraph in a contract that says insurance and indemnification, you know, won't be an ulcerating experience for engineers the way it has been for so many decades. Hopefully we can get to a point where everyone knows, oh, I mean, we have this new law. This is what it says. We don't need to talk about that. Let's make sure we get the scope right. Let's make sure we get the compensation right. Let's talk about some of the other commercial terms without this being such a huge inefficient headache for engineers and their risk managers. So that's where we were coming from with that.
To harp on that, standard of care is kind of a big issue, and you were able to basically say there's a statutory standard of care and that no language can exceed that?
We were. And so this shows the value of identifying stakeholders with whom to negotiate early on. They say that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. So we either imitated or just blatantly stole this idea from Texas. They have a very good anti-indemnity statute over there that has this same concept baked into it. And we wanted that. And basically, it says any standard of care other than the reasonably prudent engineer standard is void and unenforceable. And any standard of care provision that is expansive of that is void. And this language from the statute is subsumed therein or incorporated into that part of the contract. We got that from Texas. And when we sat down with the Alabama Association for Justice, we pointed out two things that were critically important to us. One was to emphasize the fact that the problem that we were trying to solve from the engineer's perspective was a first party problem. It was a contracting problem. It didn't affect third party rights. It didn't affect third party claims. So, you know, just the classic example of a car accident happening within the limits of construction. We pointed out that we're simply trying to limit the type of indemnity and exposure that we might owe to our first party clients for their damages, et cetera, that arise out of that car accident, not the third party that would be represented by members of the Alabama Association for Justice. And they readily got that, and they appreciated that, and they understood that. And the second thing was, we told them that we had this concept of trying to cut off the issue of expansive standards of care in contracts, which place engineers in an arguably uninsurable position, either through the use of superlatives like highest and best, et cetera. And we said, look, we simply want to marry an engineer and other design professionals to the reasonably prudent standard. And we reached common agreeable language with the Alabama Association for Justice that captures the reasonably prudent standard for a professional, in this case, a design professional. They agreed, we signed off on it. And it basically says that a design professional shall adhere to the standard of care typically exhibited by similarly situated competent professionals. And so there was value in working alongside the Alabama Association for Justice. And there's value in looking at what else is out there legally in the landscape from other states who have passed legislation like this. And so we're grateful to Texas for giving us that inspiration. And that's where we got it. And so basically it sets the standard of care that is found in that statutory provision. And it also talks about performing as expeditiously as is appropriate under that standard of care. And our intention there was to alleviate the problem caused by the five words, quote, time is of the essence, unquote. Because for a contractor, that's fine. For a design professional, that's problematic because the standard of care dictates that a design professional take whatever time is necessary, despite the schedule, arguably, to make sure that the obligation to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public is met, in addition to whatever obligations are owed to the client. And that's unique for design professionals. So that was important to us as well. And we were glad that stayed in the legislation throughout the process.
Well, to close up, what key lessons did you two learn from this 3-year journey that was ultimately successful?
Well, for me, we've gone through a number of legislative victories in my tenure, and Roger has been a part of this, of course, and other bill efforts. I'm very pleased, Jerry, that you know, we were able to pass this legislation as we celebrate in Alabama our 65th anniversary as a state organization of the ACEC. So that, you know, that's huge. You know, as I look forward, you know, I don't know of any other bill measures that we need to align ourselves with at this point, unless we're in a defense posture. But we have virtually been very successful But the thing I've learned is that, you know, the landscape in the legislature changed over these last 2.5 years, specifically because of the pandemic situation. You know, we introduced this bill effort last year in the last session, the Alabama State Legislature, which came to a short, quick sine die due to the pandemic. So we really got nowhere other than to just putting our bill on the table and, you know, claiming our intent to pass legislation and working with our partners, both industry partners and all the stakeholders in the time that passed since. It was a challenge and there was a learning curve because the legislative process was extremely challenging this year in the year of the pandemic. I mean, we were forbidden to be at the State House because of COVID. And so it was a lot more communications, a very, very different environment for all of us that call ourselves professionals in the lobbying industry, including our two teams of lobbying professionals. You know, we all had to really lean on our expertise to make things happen. So we're always learning, aren't we?
We are. And I'll just say from a lessons learned perspective, you have to recognize the reality that in order to move legislation, you're going to need help at your state house. Lobbying assistance. Now, that may be your MO's executive director if he or she is a lobbyist. You may need to go outside with that. Work on your talking points early and educate your member firms. Educate the folks who are involved in the MO. We actually held a series of meetings throughout this process with our members and others from the design professional community in Alabama. With talking points that they could take back home with them. Recognize who in your state will be for you, who will be against you, and reach out to all of them and talk with them. Be candid about what you're trying to accomplish. Don't overreach. Stay in your lane when it comes to what you're trying to do. We said repeatedly, and this has been my experience in 17 years at my engineering firm, engineers are not trying to get out from under their own responsibility. Engineers are good, hardworking, honest people who want to do the right thing. They know that there's no perfect set of plans. And if there's a mistake, they own up to it. They're not trying to run from their responsibilities. But the problem for so many years has been that the responsibilities of others have been placed on engineers contractually. And so just be candid about what you're trying to do. There's nothing wrong with that messaging. There's nothing shameful about just wanting what's fair. Don't overreach, be transparent, and lean on industry experts when going through this process. Having a strong, good executive director like Renee helps. I want to thank her and congratulate her for her leadership. Having a group like Grayling in the ACEC BIT helps. So reach out, get help, get a good, strong team, and then, you know, pick out a point on the horizon and everybody go in that direction.
Great. I think that's a great way to close. Thanks to both of you for talking to us about this today.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks for having us, Jerry.
And you've been listening to the Engineering Influence podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Business Insurance Trust. Thanks for listening.